Welcome back. Second hour of the Scott Hamilton Show. Brought to you by the U.S. Navy's Military Sealift Command. Still trying to figure out what's going on in Coral Gables. I mean, maybe Manny Diaz didn't mean to use the word opted. Maybe there was nothing deceptive or nefarious or sinister about it. Maybe D'Eriq King really wasn't offended. Perhaps he misunderstood. Either way, it looks like his time is done in Miami, and it's sad. Talented player. Run out of Houston. Should have had a fantastic career exclusively with the Houston Cougars and then perhaps on to the NFL by now. No, Dana Holgorsen, man. Not a big Holgorsen guy. And he's actually failing upward. Leaves West Virginia to go to a Group of Five program that is soon going to be a Power Five program in the same conference as West Virginia. God bless Dana Holgorsen for failing upward. But what he did to D'Eriq King, and again, we don't know everything. We just know that it went sideways with him. And the quarterback ended up leaving town because Holgorsen was not wanting to win in the day. He wanted to prepare for later years. He wanted to play the next guys coming in. It was just poor form all around. But this in Miami has me fascinated. And maybe we're reading too much into it. Let's ask our guest. Joining us on the Say Tama Hotline, ESPN's David Hale. David, good morning.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I've got a question. I've been monitoring this situation in Miami with D'Eriq King and Manny Diaz, and Manny Diaz saying that that his quarterback had opted to have season-ending surgery, and then D'Eriq King sends out the tweet, opted question mark, before deleting it. Is this much ado about nothing, or is there maybe something else going on behind the scenes there that we don't know about?
With D'Eriq King, it's a little interesting because this is to some degree reminiscent of what happened in Houston, right, where there was some discussion about his decision on whether or not to play a full season there a couple of years ago. I don't think that Manny Diaz or anyone is going to suggest that D'Eriq King is not tough enough to go out on a football field and play football games when he's a little dinged up. I mean, this is a guy who worked his way back to get back on the field for the opener after tearing his ACL in the bowl game. Opted to me is just a word that kind of gets used and maybe could be parsed a little bit, but it might be used unintentionally. I tend to not read much into it at this point. My guess is it's a little bit of a miscommunication more than anything. But it is sort of a weird situation in that yes, we have some history there with D'Eriq King. And two, the fact that this was seemed like it was.
Oh, we've lost Dave.
The whole season, and it does. There are red flags there. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, and even if it was inconsequential or rather unintended, if there's nothing behind it, the optics of it are still bad, David. I mean, it's got to be the last thing in the world that Manny Diaz needs right now, considering all the pressure, all the heat he's already feeling.
Right, absolutely. I mean, the last thing you want. Here's what Manny Diaz has going for him. Is he's still recruiting well. And the last thing you want to do is have a big controversial blow up with you and your star quarterback that puts a black mark on recruiting. Because he's sort of hanging by a thread right now. And I tend to be a little bit of a Manny apologist. I think a lot of what's happened has sort of been out of his control. I think that he's got a good mind for the job. And I think he, if given enough time, has a chance to be very successful there. And I also think, as you look at Miami historically, changing coaches hasn't exactly fixed any of their problems. But you can't have stuff like this if you're him. You the one thing that you have to be able to sit back on and say is, I've got good control of the program. We just haven't quite gotten the results that we have expected yet. But we have a good handle on the program. This is the thing that says, no, you don't have a good handle on the program. So you've got to stamp that out as quickly as possible if you're Manny Diaz.
You know, David, we've explored Miami the last couple of weeks, and I found out some things that absolutely shocked me. I knew Miami was a private university, but I didn't realize the lack of resources, the lack of money that actually is funneled into the athletic department, into the football program specifically. Kirk Herbstreit brought a lot of that to light. And I know it would be incredibly difficult, at least it would seem on the outside looking in, for them to make another coaching change, given the lack of money, given their presumed target would be Mario Cristobal, and he would come probably with a $7.5 million price tag, plus buying out assistants and all that. I guess my question is this. How far does Miami have to drop this season in order to force them to make a change, in order for them to say, Manny Diaz, we're going to make another change regardless, no matter how much it costs us? What kind of record are we looking at? Because I'm looking at the schedule right now, David. I don't see any games that I would say is a guaranteed win for Miami, even Florida State, after seeing them beat North Carolina.
No, you're 100% right on that. And I was thinking the same thing earlier this week. It's really difficult because, to some extent, you want to give – a coach the benefit of the doubt when they lose their starting quarterback, right? I mean, that makes the job very, very difficult. But the flip side of that is this conversation surrounding Manny Diaz was going on long before the D.R. King news. And so you're really – I think there's a couple of things at stake. Number one, if you're Blake James, the AD, you're pretty tied to Manny Diaz as it is, right? I mean, you're the one who hired him. You're the one who hired him away from Temple after Temple already had him – announced as their coach. You're the one who decided to make that decision quickly. You're the one who is sort of the one who's made these last few coaching hires. So to some extent, Blake James firing Manny Diaz is his own indictment of himself. So I think that's part of the calculus here is there is pressure on Blake James to get better at the win. But also to make a change sort of puts him on the hot seat as well. So I tend to think that if they can get to a situation where they're at least bowl eligible, that things will continue and they'll say, all right, this was a weird year. We lost our quarterback. We'll be better next year and give Manny another season. If it's less than that, there's going to be so much pressure among the boosters, among the former players, among the fan base that – I don't know. It gets very tough to say no.
I just think, and David, you know better than I do, it seems to me that this program is just built to fail, that the infrastructure is not there to be an elite program in 2021 the way the program was in 1988. It just seems like it's not there. They don't have the money. They don't have the facilities. I mean, my goodness gracious, they're going, what, 40 minutes to go to their home games? I just don't see how that could be appealing to any recruit. I don't know what they do other than to say, we've got to break this down, build a stadium near campus, and hope to win in 7-8 years.
Well, there's a few things. I think anytime you're talking about the long-term success of a program, the number one key, I think, is less about resources and money and facilities and all of this stuff than it is about a strategic vision that is shared throughout the program. And that means from the president to the AD to the head coach to the players to everybody else who's in that football building. And that is one thing where I do get the sense that Manny and Blake James and the athletics department are well defined in what they understand, what their limitations are, what their resources are, what they want to do, and who they want to be. Now, the question is then, if you've got that and you're still not having success, why? And I think this is to the point that you're getting at is do you have all the things that Alabama or Ohio State or Clemson have? And the answer is no, they don't. And they're never going to get to that point. I mean, what Miami fans need to understand, and I think this is probably true of even a place like USC or Nebraska and some of these other programs that really have not had the same success in the last 15 years that they had in the decade or two before that, is the world of college football has changed markedly. It is much more of a money thing, and the money has grown, by leaps and bounds. So I tend to think that there is still plenty of resources there for Miami to be a very good program. Part of the problem is that the sort of line of demarcation between very good to great is a very wide line, and I don't think fans quite understand exactly that that's where Miami is. Miami should be better, regardless of those resources that they have, should be better year in and year out than almost anybody else in the ACC. They certainly have more resources and more going for them than NC State or Virginia Tech, schools like that. So the performance still, even given the limitations that the program has, I think the performance is still underwhelmed. So to me, you've got to be more consistently good. If Dave Clausen and Wake Forest are 6-0 right now, there's not really a lot of excuses for Miami never having those types of seasons.
Yeah, I mean, how would you identify Miami? What does Miami want to be? What's their identity? What do they try to do offensively? What do they try to be defensively? I've watched a few games. I've read a few articles. I have no clue. And at least you know when you look at certain programs who they are. We've talked about Iowa at length on this program today. Iowa knows who it is. They're not great offensively. They're going to beat you defensively. They're going to win the field position battle. Can Miami say it knows who it is?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question, because for a long time that Miami was defined by a lot of things, and I think Miami still wants to define itself by what it used to be, and that is, A, not what it is anymore, and B, certainly not a formula for success in the future. And so, to your point, there's something about, I think the problem when you're Miami, and I think this is a little bit of where Manny Diaz is right now, is when you're constantly trying to sell the program, you're selling some belief, right? Because you don't have the success you don't have the history recently on your resume to say to a recruit, look, this is what we've done, come play here. You need to sell, this is what we're going to do. And when you were selling, what you do is you sell whatever vision you think that recruit wants to hear. And so when they get there, you've got to have the vision in place, and you don't, because you've just sold recruits on 25 different visions, because that's what you needed to do to get the recruit in the door. And you don't have the unified idea of what you want to be and how you want your program to look from there. And I think this is, again, not a challenge that is unique to Manny Diaz. There's a lot of programs out there that effectively look the same way. And I think this is sort of the challenge. I mean, this is one of the things Dabo Swinney's talked a lot about at Clemson over the years, is that he wasn't going to sacrifice doing the things that he wanted to do and creating the vision of the program that he wanted just to be able to win tomorrow. This is a little bit of what Mike Norvell's doing at Florida State right now, is we're going to have to deal with some genuine setbacks in order to build the foundation of a program that can be great down the road. So a little bit of this is, if Miami is constantly chasing its past, it really becomes very difficult to build something to the future.
Wow. Yeah, I was going to say the parallels to Florida State are just incredible. The irony of it, too. And I'm also having to think that everything is just so much more challenging given the rise of Central Florida in your own backyard. But it's a whole lot easier for those guys from Alabama, those guys from Texas, LSU, so on and so forth, to come in and take, as you said, Miami has resources. Miami's number one resource is talent right there in its own zip code, its own area code. But it can't hold that line like it did back during the days of Howard Schnellenberger. It's 2021, not 1981.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. I mean, there are no secrets on the recruiting trail really anymore. And, you know, if Miami isn't getting the benefit of the doubt from recruits, because most of them weren't even alive the last time Miami had a genuinely great season. So you're asking recruits, hey, like, invest in Miami, your hometown, your local team. And I just don't think that those guys feel the same way about Miami that they did in the 80s and 90s. And meanwhile, you have programs like Georgia, like Alabama, like Clemson, that are happy to go into Florida and have the type of cachet where that's fine. And, you know, the other thing that doesn't really get talked about much with that is there was a level of, hey, look, Miami, playing at Miami, if I'm from Miami, means that my friends and family can come and drive down to the stadium and come see me play. Well, now when you have cost of attendance and travel benefits and all of this stuff worked into athletes' scholarships and recruiting offers, that's a little less of a thing. Like, most families, if they want to come see a player play, can do that financially, based on what you get as part of your scholarship. Now, of course, there's other limitations with time and all of that, but it's not as big of a deal to be playing in your backyard as it used to be.
Excellent stuff from David Hale. You can follow him on Twitter at David Hale Joint. David, seriously, excellent stuff, buddy. Appreciate you coming on today.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
All right. It's David Hale of ESPN joining us on the Saitama Hotline.